And hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I started just a couple weeks ago titled Too Bright to See. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Dad, I Miss You. And then it's I Am a Thief, Fletcher and the Falling Leaves, Kate, Who Tamed the Wind, Kind Carl, A Little Crocodile with Big Feelings, and if we have time, we'll finish up the first half hour with Dear Substitute. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Dad, I Miss You. I really want to show you how I caught the fish we ate for supper yesterday. Dad, I didn't even need anybody's help. You would be so proud of me. You taught me so well that day we went out fishing as a family. You are such a good teacher, and I learned so much that day. Thank you, Dad. I wish I could take you out fishing with me today, my son, but they will be here any minute. I was so proud of you for feeding the family yesterday. You will be a great provider when you have a family of your own, my son. Oh, no. I can hear the airplane approaching. I don't want to go back there, Dad. It'll all be over soon. Before you know it, they'll let us have you home with us again. Just do as they say, my son. They said it will be better this way. Dad, don't let them take me, please, Dad. I want to stay here with you, Mom, and my baby sister. My baby sister, please don't let them take her too, Dad. I couldn't protect her there. I hope they don't take my baby girl away, too. I should have hidden her. It's too late now. They've already seen her. Dad, please, why aren't you telling them to stop? I belong with you, Dad, not them. Please don't cry, my son. They said it will be better this way. Goodbye, my son. I'll see you soon. Remember to always think of us, your grandparents, and your home. Think about the things we taught you. Think about your language and where you come from. Before you know it, you'll be back home with us, your family. I hate it here, Dad. It's always so cold. It smells. And the people are scary. I can't speak my own language. They said I'll be punished if I do. I barely remember how to speak our language anyway. I hope you're doing okay, my son. I hope you know we are thinking of you. Your sister cries for you. I'm relieved they did not take her. Not yet, anyway. She is only 2 years old, after all. They wouldn't do that. They couldn't, could they? She's home with us, at least for another year. I feel guilty for allowing them to take you. They said it will be better this way. I'm tired of hurting here, Dad. I want to come home. My son, you'll be home soon. I hope you're keeping warm. I hope they're feeding you well. We ate your favorite meal yesterday, fish and rice. We thought of you the entire time. Do you remember that day you caught the fish we had for supper? I was so proud of you. You will be a great provider one day. I can't do this anymore. I'm so hungry, Dad. I need you. We miss you a lot, but you're learning to read in English and count numbers. They said it would be better this way. It feels good to be home, Dad. I sure miss you all, but I feel so lost here. I don't remember how to speak our language. I can barely understand what anybody is saying to me. I don't remember how to hunt or how to build things. I don't know what to do here. I don't belong here anymore. It's good to have you back home, my son. I know you've forgotten some parts of yourself, but after some time, you'll find yourself again. I miss you. Welcome home, son. This story is written in the form of a conversation through thoughts between a father and his son. The characters are not speaking to each other, but are communicating with each other in their minds. The reason for this is because many residential school survivors who experienced abuse kept their experiences to themselves. Many felt ashamed and did not open up about the abuse they experienced. In this story, the son does not tell his father that he experienced abuse at residential school prior to being sent away for the last time. Upon returning home, the son feels a sense of disconnect with his cultural identity. But in the end, his father believes that in time, his son will reconnect with his identity. I am a thief. I am a thief. Me, Eliza Jane Murphy, line leader, caring friend, captain of the worm rescue team. Thief. The stone made me do it. It sparkled at me. And she's at school, and there's a sign that says exploring green, and she sees an emerald on the table, and she took it. In a flash of brilliant green, it was mine. And my heart stopped singing. My letters went wonky. I was too heavy to swing. Everyone stopped what they were doing and looked for the stone. My cheeks burned. I wanted to put it back. But what if someone saw? At home, I hid it. But I felt like I glowed green. Daddy, have you ever stolen anything? Never. His shocked eyes made my not singing heart crumple up. Mama, have you ever stolen anything? Mama smiled, a magnet. Did you give it back? Of course. Why? I shrugged. My own mother, a thief. Grandpa, have you ever stolen anything? Grandpa chuckled. Yeah, I once took a Yankee keychain from my friend Bill. Did he find out? He did. By golly, he was mad. And Grandpa George? And why was he laughing? Who else in my family was a thief? I decided to investigate. Nana Iris admitted to taking packets of sugar from the diner. Often. And her dog James was a notorious sausage thief. My baby brother Jack once swiped a lady's sandwich. Two Christmases ago, Cousin Clara stole Santa's beard. Well, she tried anyway. And Uncle Tim's goat pinched Jack's underpants and ate them. It seemed like everyone in my family was a thief. Maybe I should have felt better knowing I wasn't alone. But I didn't. I knew what I had to do. The next day, I gave back the stone. Miss Delano did not send me to the principal or say my days as line leader were finished. She said I was brave. I told Miss Delano I came from a long line of thieves. She had probably stolen something too, if she thought about it. Then I realized nobody is just a thief. Everyone is a lot of things. We put the stone back, and my heart started singing again. I decided to close my investigation. But it turned out it wasn't quite finished. Because the last picture shows her in the kitchen with her dad, and her dad is stealing a piece of cake from the refrigerator. Fletcher and the Falling Leaves. The world was changing. Each morning, when Fletcher bounded out of the den, everything seemed just a little bit different, and Fletcher is a fox. The rich green of the forest was turning to a dusty gold, and the soft, swishing sound of summer was fading to a crinkly whisper. Fletcher's favorite tree looked dull, dry, and brown. Fletcher was beginning to get worried. "I think my tree is sick," said Fletcher. "What's wrong with it?" his mother asked. "Its leaves are turning brown," said Fletcher. "Don't worry, it's only autumn," she said. Fletcher ran back to his tree and patted the rough bark. "Don't worry, it's only autumn," he said. "You'll be feeling better soon." But the tree didn't get better. Each day, more leaves turned brown. One morning, the wind blew a small brown leaf off of a branch. Fletcher jumped up and caught it, very gently, in his paw. "Don't worry, tree. I've got your leaf. I'll fix you." Fletcher looked around, picked a piece of grass, and carefully tied the leaf to a branch. Just then, another gust of wind ruffled Fletcher's fur. The little leaf shook itself free and fluttered back to the ground. Fletcher picked it up again and thought very hard. Then he poked the leaf onto a twig and pushed it down firmly. "Now you hold on tight," said Fletcher. "No more flying around." The little leaf gave a tiny rustle in reply. The next day, a strong wind was blowing through the forest. Fletcher rushed out of the den and ran all the way to his tree. Lots of branches were bare, and little lost leaves spun everywhere. "Don't worry, tree. I'll catch them for you, I promise." Round and round and round whirled Fletcher after the swirling leaves. "Leaves, wonderful, just what I need for my nest," said a squirrel. "But these belong to the tree," said Fletcher. "Don't take them away."
"No, the tree doesn't need them anymore," said the squirrel, bounding off.
"Help, help, the wind and the squirrel are stealing our leaves," cried Fletcher. "Leaves, terrific, just what I need to keep warm," said a porcupine, rolling around. "But these belong to the tree," said Fletcher, plucking leaves from the porcupine's needles.
"Not anymore,"
snuffed the porcupine, and away he rolled. "Help, help, the wind, the squirrel, and the porcupine are stealing our leaves," cried Fletcher. Suddenly, a flock of friendly birds swooped down from the sky. They picked up the leaves in their beaks and poked them onto the tree's branches. Soon the tree was leafy again, and Fletcher flopped down and smiled. "Thank you, birds, thank you," he gasped as the birds fluttered away. He lay looking up through the leaves at the sky and drifted off to sleep. But the wind continued to blow, and the branches still danced. The leaves shivered and shook themselves and began to wiggle free. They tossed and turned and twitched and twirled and tumbled to the ground. They brushed Fletcher's ears and nose and filled his dreams with a whispering sound. When Fletcher finally woke up, he couldn't believe his eyes. Instead of a roof of dancing leaves, all he could see were bare branches against the sky.
"Oh, tree, I'm so sorry," gulped Fletcher. "All your leaves are gone."
But then he saw high in the branches, one small leaf still holding on.
"I won't let the wind steal that one," said Fletcher, and he began to climb.
He crawled along to the last leaf and held it firmly onto its branch.
All day long the wind blew, the branch bounced,
and Fletcher held tight.
"I'll stay with you, leaf," he said. "Don't worry."
But then, with a sudden whoosh of wind, the branch bounced high.
With a plip, the leaf let go and fluttered like a little flag clutched in Fletcher's paw.
Fletcher looked sadly at the leaf he had promised to save. He carried it carefully down the tree and back to the den. He made a cozy little bed for it and gently tucked it in. But all night long, he could only think of his tree, all on its own.
At dawn, Fletcher tiptoed outside. The wind had finally stopped blowing, and the air was cold.
The moon still hung in the clear sky, and pale stars glimmered.
As he came to his favorite tree, Fletcher saw a magical sight.
The tree was hung with 1,000 icicles, shining silver in the early light.
"You are more beautiful than ever," whispered Fletcher.
"But are you all right?"
A tiny breeze shivered the branches, making a sound like laughter. And in the light of the rising sun, the sparkling branches nodded.
Fletcher gave his tree a hug. Then he went back to the den for a nice, warm breakfast.
Kate, Who Tamed the Wind.
Once there was a man living all alone in a creaky house on the tip-top of a steep hill. The man lived all alone in the creaky house on the tippy-top of a steep hill where a soft wind blew. The man lived all alone in the creaky house where the curtains swung and chimes spun as a soft wind blew and blew and blew. The wind blew until the shutters banged in the creaky house on the tip-top of the steep hill. The wind blew, the shutters banged, and the boards bent. The wind blew, the shutters banged, the boards bent. The table tipped, and the tea spilled. The tea spilled, and the bread broke on the tippy table in the creaky house at the tip-top of the steep hill. And still the wind blew. The wind blew, and off the birds flew. The birds flew, and the dust did too. And the man cried, "What to do? What to do?" The wind whipped his words from the tip-top of the steep hill to the itty-bitty town at the bottom, where a little girl called Kate heard the cry, and felt it too. She wondered what on earth to do. Wind? New trees? Kate could not stop the wind, she knew, but she could wheel a load of new trees to the tip-top of the dusty hill in her wagon. So there she is, delivering the new trees. There, Kate dug deep holes and watered muddy mounds till the trees grew. As the trees grew, the wind blew. The trees grew, the wind blew, and the time flew. The time flew as the trees grew and grew. And Kate did, too. The trees grew till the leaves fluttered and the shutters stilled and the boards bounced back. The leaves fluttered, the shutters stilled, the boards bounced back, and the dust died down. The dust died down, the tea steeped, and the birds peeped. The birds peeped, and the old man poured sweet tea and said, "For you," near the quiet house on the tip-top of the green hill, where a bright breeze blew. Kind Carl, a little crocodile with big feelings. Carl lives in Orlando. He loves cardigans, crepes, and combing his hair. Keep in mind that Carl is an alligator, and he has a terrible temper. It's not that he didn't want to be kind. It's just that life was sometimes hard, and his temper was quick to show up. He'd tell himself it was because he was a crocodile. "I just snap," he'd say. "I can't help it." But deep down, he knew that wasn't entirely true. He snapped to keep people away when he got embarrassed. He snapped when feelings filled his body and got too overwhelming. And he snapped when he didn't know what else to do. He just wanted it all to stop. But snapping didn't stop only the hard stuff. It stopped him from feeling happy. It stopped him from trying new things. And it stopped people from wanting to be around him. It scared people, people he wanted as his friends. Carl felt confused. One afternoon, in language arts class, Mr. Flamingo called on him to spell a word. Carl was pretty good at spelling. Last week, he spelled cardigan on the first try. But he always got a little nervous. "Spell crepe," said the teacher. Carl smiled. He must have ordered at least 10 crepes in his lifetime. "Well, this should be easy," he thought. "Crepe," said Carl. "C-R-A-P-E." "Almost," said Mr. Flamingo, "but not quite." Behind him, an emu named Sophie laughed. "Looks like Krabby Carl can't even spell his favorite food." Carl whirled and looked at Sophia. He wanted to keep his cool. He wanted his body to relax. But that's not what happened. He snapped. "Why don't you fly back to Uka Hunka, Sophia?" "Oh, that's right. Emus can't fly," he snarled. Carl threw his comb at the board and ran out of the classroom. Back home, Carl felt pretty deflated. "Oh, nobody likes me," he thought. "I'm stupid," he thought. "Crocodiles just can't be kind," he thought. But then he paused. Where did those thoughts come from? Those ideas weren't true. I had 3 friends show up for my birthday party. I can do fractions standing on my head. And I help my mom brush her teeth every night. As Carl noticed this, he pictured the thoughts drifting away on clouds. Nobody likes me. Crocodiles can't be kind. See you later, alligators. Just picturing this made Carl feel better. After that, Carl started to question more thoughts in his mind, and he decided to be a little kinder to himself. When he felt sad, he took care of that sad part of himself. Sometimes he jumped on his trampoline. Sometimes he made drawings using all the crayons in his box. And sometimes he just cried. And that was okay. When he felt all tight in his body, he thanked his body for telling him. "Thanks, body," he'd say. And then he'd comb his hair for about 5 minutes, which usually calmed him down. And when he got an almost but not quite at school, he didn't call himself names. He patted himself on the cheek when no one was looking and whispered, "You did your best today, and you can try again next time." Carl wondered if everybody's minds worked like his did? If so, it made him want to be a little kinder to them too. But if I'm kind to other people, will they be mean to me? He decided to try it out. He held the door for a stranger when their hands were full. When Sophia wanted to play a xylophone, he was playing. He offered to take turns, and it actually sounded pretty good. And he sat by a friend and listened when they were upset. He even heard a mule deer named Emma call him Kind Carl. He liked the sound of that. It felt different to be kind instead of afraid, but it felt right. And people weren't mean. In fact, most people were even kinder to him than he could have imagined. One friend helped him put on his jacket. Another helped him pick up crayons when he dropped them on the floor. And a rhino named Steve, who he never thought would be kind, said hi to him and taught him a trick with a soccer ball. Carl felt strong. One day in art class, a bison named Noah spilled some paint on Carl's favorite cardigan. Carl noticed the anger rise in him. He noticed his body tense up. And he even noticed his mind call Noah a bird brain, which was an odd thing to call a bison. Noah prepared for the worst. But Carl didn't snap. He took a deep breath. "That's okay, Noah. I feel a little angry, but I know it was an accident." "I'm sorry, Carl," said Noah, and together they went to the sink to wash out the paint. Carl still lives in Orlando, but he's hoping to make it to Paris one day for some real crepes. I mean, crepes. Life is still hard sometimes. People can be mean and frustrating. His mind can be loud, and his temper shows up every so often. But now Carl chooses kindness at least once a day. He isn't perfect, and he doesn't need to be. Every day is an opportunity to practice. And that's a lot of kindness. I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with a picture book titled Dear Substitute. Dear Substitute, wow, this is a surprise. What are you doing here? Where's Mrs. Giordano? And why didn't she warn us? Dear Attendants, you're not quite right today. The substitute doesn't know how to pronounce anything. Poor Charvy and Betty. Poor Alandria. Dear homework that I stayed up late doing. Guess what? You're not being collected until Mrs. Giordano gets back. I could have shot more baskets last night after all. Dear pledge, I pledge allegiance to Mrs. Giordano. I like her more today than I normally do. Dear library, the substitute says we're not coming to you, even though it's Tuesday and I remembered to bring back my book. The substitute brought books from home that she thinks we should check out. That's what she said, and then she laughed. Dear turtle, we're supposed to clean your tank today. It's Tank Tuesday. Everyone knows that. The substitute says maybe tomorrow. Please don't explode or die of dirt or escape. P.S. Mrs. Giordano would never skip tank cleaning day. Dear class rules, we have you for a reason. And one of the rules should be the whole day can't be changed around by a sub named Miss Pelly. Pelly like a pelican, she told us. And then she laughed again. Miss Pelly doesn't take anything seriously. Dear line, yes, I do know I'm supposed to be line leader this week, especially since I was chair stacker last week. I'm sorry that you-know-who doesn't know how we do things in room 102. Dear Lunch, at least in here, everything's the same, including chocolate milk and trading food with Connor. Even though trading food is not exactly allowed. Dear Miss Pelly, now you care about rules? How did you even see us swapping? I think you have what my mom has. Back of the head eyes. I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking about people being allergic to things. I was just thinking about Connor's yummy chips. Dear Tears, not here. Not now, you understand. Dear Storytime, we usually only get you on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Today's an extra. Miss Pelly says it's that kind of day. She says sometimes you have to mix things up a bit by reading strange little poems instead of the chapter book we were reading before. Dear World, it turns out I really like poetry. Especially funny poetry. Especially funny poetry about pelicans and crocodiles and underwear. Dear Turtle, here's a poem I made up. A funny old friend is Turtle. If he doesn't die of the dirtle, he's got a tough shell that helps him not smell. Tomorrow we'll get water and squirtle him. P.S. Miss Pelly helped. Dear Miss Pelly, I wonder what kind of food you bring in your lunch. I might write another poem. It might be about surprises and back-of-the-head eyeses and a switched-around day that's A-OK and a substitute who likes kiwi fruit. P.S. Do you? Dear Mrs. Giordano, it's okay if you're not quite ready to come back tomorrow. We're doing fine. I mean, not exactly like if you were here, but sometimes you've got to mix things up a little, you know? And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for a couple weeks, titled Too Bright to See. 11-year-old Bug is used to haunted things. After all, the occasional cold spot or mysteriously slamming door is to be expected when your home is almost as old as the dirt it sits on. But when a new presence makes itself known the summer before Bug starts middle school, it's clear that this spirit is intent on communicating something directly to Bug. But what and why? As Bug begins to untangle the mystery of this new ghost, an altogether different truth tugs free. It's the answer to a question of identity, one Bug never even thought to ask. Okay, last week, during a memorial at Bug's house for her Uncle Roderick, who just died, while doing dishes, she sees an image in the window after talking with her best friend, Mo. We also learn Uncle Roderick had a boyfriend. Summer camp got canceled because paying for the hospice cost more than expected. One night, when Bug goes to bed, she sees a tall, thin, dark shape in her bedroom. Normally, her uncle would comfort her. She woke the next morning not knowing exactly what it was. And that's where I left off last week. Chapter 4. Mo called after breakfast to ask if she could spend the night. So I'm waiting on the front porch with Uncle Roderick's worn collection of Edgar Allan Poe stories. I haven't made it to the library in a while, and he used to read this book to me on cold winter evenings. I want to hear his voice again, a little bit, in today's heat. A shout comes from down the road, and I look up to see Mo struggling her way toward my house. She must have found my bicycle by the side of the road because she's walking it down the driveway with one hand, guiding hers with the other. Her sleeping bag is squished under one arm, and some heavy-looking shopping bags are looped over the handlebars. Well, driveway is what we call this stretch, even though it's just a dirt road that runs up to my house, which you turn onto from another, slightly bigger gravel road. It only takes 20 minutes to bike between our houses, and we've been doing it regularly for years. I put down my book and launch over the porch railing to help her up the driveway. "Hey, Bug," she calls, "seen any new ghosts?" "Just the old ones," I say. She asks that every time she comes to my house, and I always give her the same answer. Last night unfolds in my mind, and I suddenly wonder if I'm telling the truth, then shake my head quickly to one side to knock that thought out of my brain. Mo unslings the shopping bags, and I wheel my bike back under the porch. It's a little dented, grubby. A word for it might be battered. I like it that way, like something belonging to a scrappy, adventurous youth in some old-timey detective novel. Mo just got a new bike. It was definitely expensive, sleek, and rose gold. And it looks just like her, somehow, if a bike could resemble a person. Her old bike had Hello Kitty all over it, and neither one of us is into Hello Kitty. So she covered them all up with patches of duct tape a long time ago. I thought it looked cool, but she said she outgrew it. And I don't think she meant by getting taller. "Thanks for bringing it back," I tell her, saying that I suddenly got too sad to pedal would lead to a whole conversation I don't want to have with sighs and sympathetic looks. "So I got a foot cramp earlier," I lie. "Was about to go get it, but thanks." "No prob. I don't know if you want to talk about it or whatever," she begins. Bringing her bike up onto the porch, I hold my breath against the rising sharpness in my chest. "But your uncle was the best. I'm sorry." "Yeah," I say, tightly, before she can launch into some memory she has of him. I feel like I'm wearing that old dress again, pulling my rib cage close. "Thanks." The door creaks open as soon as we step onto the porch. Mo jumps back and eyes it warily. "No new ghost," I tell her again. "I hope I'm right." "Okay," she says, "but you go in first." Mo and I didn't get along when we were little, but over the past few years, we've slowly figured it out. We didn't have much of a choice. Our moms started a business together when we were toddlers, so we grew up with each other. We definitely wouldn't have been friends if we weren't forced into it. But I'm glad it happened, most of the time. Now we say we're best friends. And it's true enough, even though memories of when we didn't like each other are always shifting beneath the surface. All of our other friends were her friends first. Sometimes she invites me to a sleepover at someone else's house, or someone's mom will drive three or four of us to the mall an hour away. Otherwise, I play by myself or with Mo or with Uncle Roderick, but I don't want my mind to go there now. We unroll our sleeping bags in the living room like always. Mo claims the first floor of my house feels less haunted than the second floor, and she won't set foot in the cellar. I don't blame her. "Hi, Mo," says Mom, coming in through the dining room. "Do you know if your mom got the last shipment of cardstock?" "Not yet," says Mo. "Also, she says she hasn't found a good deal on envelopes. And you should call her to talk about finding a new vendor." Not a problem, Mom says. Her tone is light, but something tighter flashes across her face. It's gone before I can blink. Will you girls be eating dinner with me, she asks, or should I be a terrible in loco parentis and let you eat popcorn and ice cream all night? There are enough leftovers from the memorial to last for weeks, and I don't want to abandon Mom yet. We'll eat with you, I say, and Mo nods in agreement. Usually, when Mo and I spend time with our moms, we come up with new card ideas together. After my dad died, Mo says that she got frustrated with all the stupid condolence cards people sent, all sunsets and flowery messages about better places and how everything happens for a reason. She started designing her own cards that were sarcastic and funny, but also still sad, and started bringing them into little stationery shops around the area. Mo's mom had experience running a mail order business, and even though her husband's job meant that she didn't need to work anymore, soon the two of them had a whole line of greeting cards in stores across the country. We're not rich, but as Mom always tells me, we have everything that we need and some of what we want. But tonight, none of us feel like talking about clever responses to sad things. Mo and Mom argue about some YouTuber that I've never heard of. Their laughs float up to the ceiling, sounding hollow and far away. I tune it out. One tiny bite of potato salad, one leaf of kale salad, one half of a meatball. Everything tastes like nothing. A huge mirror hangs on the wall across from me, and I avoid looking at it, pushing my food around instead. When I glance up at Mom, her plate is still as full as mine. I just don't understand why you would want to watch someone play a game on the internet when you could just play that game on the internet yourself, she's saying. I played video games for hours when I was your age, but at least I was the one playing them. Oh, come on, Sabrina. Didn't you ever, like, watch people play? Like, if there was a boy that you liked and he invited you over to watch him play a video game? You did that, right? Mom smirks. What exactly do you know about what boys do when they invite you over? I'm wondering the same thing. Does she suddenly know what dates are like? As far as I know, she's never even held a boy's hand. Mo flushes just a little. I mean, not much. But I've heard that that's a thing people used to do or still do, right? Well, maybe Mom relents sometimes. But that's different. At least we were in the same physical space. I'm just saying, there's something about watching a game being played live. You don't have to join in to enjoy it. And there's like live commenting, chatting with people who are also watching, that sort of thing. It's not so different from actually sitting with your friends and watching them. Mom turns to me. What do you think, Bug? Are you team real world or team internet? I freeze. Mo knows I never want to watch YouTube videos with her, but she might get frustrated if I side with Mom. I stall. Surprisingly, Mo comes to my rescue. Oh, she's team dead trees. Bug just wants to read. You know that. Has a teacher ever assigned a book you haven't already read? I grudgingly shake my head and Mom laughs. It's nice to hear her laugh, but I wish it had come from something I said. A voice whispers to me that Mo is being a better daughter than me, and it forces me to my feet, forces a lightness in my voice. Team dead trees all the way, I exclaimed. Do you want us to clean up? Mom crumples her napkin and drops it onto her plate, as if she's trying to hide how much she didn't eat. Thanks, love, but I'll take care of it. You two should go watch a movie or something. Mo, thank you for coming over. No problem, says Mo. Also, could you start calling me Moriah? Mom pauses in stacking the dishes and seems about to ask a question, but nods instead. Of course, Moriah. Let me know if you girls need anything. We go into the living room, and I plop down on the couch. Moriah? I ask. No one calls her that ever. Well, we're starting middle school soon, said Mo, is a little kid name. You might want to do the same, Bug. I twitch. I hate the name on my birth certificate and never use it. I imagine school starting, introducing myself as... The lights flicker for a second. Mo jumps, stares balefully at the filigree metal lamp, and grabs one of the shopping bags she brought with her. Usually, they're full of snacks and DVDs. But when she dumps the bag upside down, jars of nail polish and tubes of lip gloss scatter across the floor, along with other shiny plastic things I don't recognize. The second bag is full of brushes and combs and hair products. We used to play makeover when we were younger, smearing whatever odds and ends we could scavenge from her mom's stash or Uncle Roderick's collection over each other's faces to see who could look the funniest. I have a sinking suspicion that that isn't Mo's or Mariah's plan for tonight. What's all this for, I ask. I tug at my ponytail hard, then let go, and prickles run up and down my spine like someone is sitting right behind me. I try not to shudder. If Mariah notices anything ghostly, she might go home early. Whatever she wants to do right now is better than being alone. Like I said, we're starting middle school, Mariah sorts through the pile, putting the nail polish and everything in some kind of order. These are all brand new, unopened, and in bright packaging. She must have gone shopping. So, I ask, is there some law saying that you have to cover your face in gunk before you walk through the front door? Mariah laughs, but I don't think she thought it was funny. There's no law. But first impressions matter. I heard that all the girls at Maplewood wear makeup and stuff. Well, not all of them, but most of them. Definitely all the popular ones. You want to make a fresh start, right? So that's why she's going by her full name. It's going to be all the same people we know already. They got their first impression of us when we were five. How fresh do you think this start is going to be? I can't imagine that starting middle school magically erases your memories of what someone looked like 3 months ago. That's not true. There will be kids from a lot of other schools bust in, and sometimes people change over the summer. Come on, do you want middle school to be exactly the same as the past 7 years? I definitely do not. Maybe she has a point. Do I really want middle school to be just like elementary school? No one bullied me exactly, but I also didn't have any other good friends. I had a reputation for being a teacher's pet, which wasn't fair. I never tried to get teachers to like me. I was just quiet and focused on my work because it was interesting enough most of the time. And getting good grades just felt like playing a game and winning. But I didn't bother to explain that ever because I knew it wouldn't help. If Mo didn't sit with me at lunch, I would find a corner and eat by myself, reading a book. She'd sometimes invite me to sit with her at a more populated table, but I always refused, and I'll bet she was relieved. Even when I tried to follow along with the more popular girls, I was always one step out of line, whereas Mo seemed to crack the grade school girl code without even trying. Like 2 years ago, Mo's grandmother gave her a stuffed skunk for Christmas. a babyish gift for a fourth grader, but Mo thought it was cute and started bringing it with her to school. The next day, another girl brought in a stuffed bunny. The day after, most of the class, even the boys, had brought in stuffed animals from home. Our teacher said we could keep them on our desk if they weren't distracting. So the next day, I brought one in too. Except instead of an animal, mine was a funny representation of the bubonic plague. I don't know why. Mom picked it up in a kooky shop in a tourist town, and I thought it was funny. No one else thought so, and a rumor spread that if you sat next to me, you'd get some awful disease. Everyone was used to calling me Bug, but suddenly that became a joke. Bug has bugs, that sort of thing. Mo didn't join in, but she also didn't make any big speeches about why it was cool to be different. No matter what teachers and books say, that would have been embarrassing for both of us. The next day, I brought in a squirrel puppet. But the fad was over by then, and no one but Mo would sit next to me for weeks. That's the only time in my life I considered going by my real name. Pick a color, Mariah encourages. I'll do your nails. I grab a bottle at random, strawberry-licious, according to the label, and hand it to her. It can't hurt to practice, I guess. The smell of nail polish uncurls under my nose as she starts carefully painting my fingernails. It reminds me of those playdates when we were little kids. Back then, the colors weren't strawberry-licious. We would paint each nail a different shade of blue, or alternate Christmas colors, or a rainbow. Most of the time, it looked like we dipped our entire fingertips into the bottle. This precise, methodical application is new. You might want to ask your mom to take you shopping, she says, brow furrowed as she focuses on each nail. You don't want to start the school year in the same old clothes, right? I haven't really thought about it, I say. Well, if you want, I could go with and help you pick out some cute new outfits, she says. You can have your own style, of course, but I don't know if it's a good idea to keep dressing like a boy. She says that like it's obvious, but this is news to me. I look down at my cut-off jean shorts and baggy t-shirt. Do I dress like a boy, I ask? I'm not trying to. I just dress like, I don't know, I just wear whatever. Mo laughs a little. There are plenty of boys who dress better than you. We could get you a pink bow tie if you want. That could work. Come on, it'll be fun. She's not trying to be mean, I don't think, but there's no nice way to tell someone that they're doing something wrong, which apparently I am. I don't know what to say. I don't want to have a style. Suddenly, my old shirt and shorts feel like they're sticking to me. But Mo is still painting my nails. My stomach starts to race, and my heart matches it thrum for thrum. Mo doesn't seem to notice anything wrong and releases my hands. Voila, she exclaims in a bad French accent. A beautiful manicure for the beautiful young lady. And now, the face. I close my eyes and force myself to sit still as she starts messing with my face. This is nothing like the smeary paint jobs I remember. I wonder if she's been practicing or if this is another thing she suddenly understands that I don't. Her fingers are soft and light, moving delicately from my eyes to my cheeks to my lips. And I keep my breathing shallow and steady. The queasiness in my stomach turns into something light and tingly. I love having my hair played with, even though I always keep it pulled back in a ponytail. And this is just as soothing. I've read scenes in novels where characters do this kind of thing, and it's always peaceful and friendly, and eventually transformative. Maybe this whole middle school girl thing won't be so bad. After not long enough, Mariah, puts her hands down and declares me finished. She comes with me to the dining room so we can admire her masterpiece together. She makes me close my eyes until I'm positioned in front of the mirror. 3, 2, 1, open! I open my eyes and scream. Mariah jumps a mile. What? What is it? My heart's leapt out of my throat, but I manage to croak. Nothing. Surprised, it's okay. I've gotten used to not always recognizing my face in the mirrors of my strange house, but whoever is peering back at me is no one I have ever seen before. I swallow my heart a little and look at the reflection, my reflection, more closely. She's a stranger, but a nice-looking one. I can see my face under hers, but it's like staring at my identical twin. If my identical twin were a pretty-ish girl, my stomach rolls again, a stew of surprise and shame and curiosity. I never knew that I could look like that, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. When girls in books or movies get makeovers, they're thrilled with what they see in the mirror. I wonder if that only happens in fiction, or if it's normal to act like you've seen a ghost. Once again, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel, Too Bright to See. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.